here's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writing about this, the glories of the holy names, hearing through Haridas Thakur. Sri Gauranga Dev, that's Lord Chaitanya, the deliverer of the fallen souls, preached humility through Rupa and Sanatan, detachment, because he accepted the sannyas order, Sarup Damodar, tolerance through Haridas Thakur, and self-control through Ramananda Roy. According to the statements of some devotees, Mahaprabhu preached about his pastimes through Sri Rupa, devotional service through Sri Sanatana, the glories of the holy name through Haridas Thakur, and love of God through Rai Ramananda. We have no argument in this regard. Some say this, some say that. We have no argument. We don't take sides. They're both right. So especially tolerance. We heard on Monday some of the circumstances of the life of Haridas, where he displayed this capacity for tolerance, although he was he was tortured. He was put through different circumstances where he was criticized and this and that. He just was very tolerant. As Lord Chaitanya teaches, it's a quality. Humility and tolerance are two qualities necessary for kirtaniya siddhartha, for always chanting, which he did. So he who is always chanting the holy name in a humble state of mind is certainly capable of revealing the glories of the holy name. That's what we're going to hear in this chapter. And the title of the book, Harinam Chintamani, is taken from a verse from Padma Purana. And you probably know this one too. You recognize it? Can you read it? Nama Chintamani Krishnas Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Shuddho Nitya Mukto Vinitvan Nama Namino. This is a verse from Padma Purana, and as you see, the title of the book is right here, Nama Chintamani, or that the glories of the holy name. It specifically is described that the holy name acts like touchstone. Here's the translation. The holy name of Krishna is transcendentally blissful. It bestows all spiritual benediction, for it is Krishna himself, the reservoir of all pleasure. Krishna's name is complete, and it is the form of all transcendental mellows, Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. It is not a material name under any condition, and it is no less powerful than Krishna himself. Since Krishna's name is not contaminated by the material qualities, there is no question of its being involved with Maya. Krishna's name is always liberated and spiritual. It is never conditioned by the laws of material nature. This is because the name of Krishna and Krishna himself are identical. That's this last line. Abhina Tvam Nama Namino. So, Hari Nama Chintamani. Hari is a name of the Supreme Lord, Hari. And Nama Chintamani. So, some of you may be familiar with Brahma Samhita, where Lord Brahma speaks of the spiritual world. He discloses what it's like in the kingdom of God. If you ever wanted to know, you could just find out from Lord Brahma, he knows. And the spiritual world is made of Chintamani. So here things are made of material elements, like, you know, this building. So plaster and wood and cement and nails and steel and material elements. That's what buildings are made of here. In the spiritual world, buildings are made of conscious spirit. trees are conscious spirit, the water is conscious spirit, the things moving and non-moving, they're fully conscious. They're the building blocks, you know, the atoms that things are made of are conscious. Pretty amazing. So that's what Chintamani, and you come in contact with that, it's conscious, and you, it helps to awaken your consciousness. By contact with the holy name, spiritual consciousness becomes awakened, just like if you contact fire. You get hot. You take on the property of that which you just contacted, fire or cold. You become cold. You contact Chintamani, Nama Chintamani, and the spiritual consciousness innate within the living entity becomes awakened or illumined just by association. This is quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, as you see. So the author of the book is pictured here. We'll say his pranam mantra down below together. Namo bhakti vinodaya satchitananda namine gaura shakti swarupaya rupanuga varayate. That translation reads, I offer my respectful obeisances unto Satchitananda bhakti vinod, who is transcendental energy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is a strict follower of the Goswamis headed by Sri Rupa. Rupanuga Varayate. Oh, Bhakti Vinod Thakur incredibly powerful acharya. He revived the teachings of Lord Chaitanya during a time when they were practically lost or worse. Those that were carrying the name of Lord Chaitanya were deviated persons, and the deviations they were engaged in was abominable. So Lord Chaitanya's name had a bad name, and it was during the time of the British occupancy, so the slogan was everything Indian is backwards and everything British is good, and, you know, propaganda to the max, especially amongst the intellectuals. And he was from that intellectual community, and he emerged from that intellectual community as an emblem by his personal life and by his words of Lord Chaitanya's teachings. He wrote 100 books, along with raising 10 children. You two take some time, probably, from mom and dad. Multiply times 5. And then have mom or dad write 100 books. Along with being a high court judge and having all the social responsibilities that go along with that. And being called upon to, you know, to teach and to lecture and all those kinds of obligations. And seeing that the message of Lord Chaitanya should go all over the world and taking steps to help make that happen when Lord Chaitanya was just obscured and, you know, in an age where everything was upside down. And so great, great, great acharya. And by his inspiration, his son, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, took on the task of taking the message of Lord Chaitanya outside of India. His disciples went to England, and it was like it was a major theme of his life, along with his vast writings. Anyway, the visionary was Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and one of his books was this Harinam Chintamani. He wrote it later in his life. Here's a little description. Here's the year of his birth, 1838, and he left this world in 1914, so nearly 80 years old, 76 years old. This book is divided into 15 chapters and composed in Bengali verse form. This book is an account of Haridas Thakur's teachings on the Holy Name. This footnote A is the method of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The method of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was just a little one of the first writings that he created. He didn't receive a Srimad Bhagavatam copy until he was in his mid 30s, 36, because then there weren't printing presses. It was just beginning. So he had a handwritten copy of Srimad Bhagavatam without its purports. And after reading it once, he wrote in his autobiography, "It was so wonderful, I read it again." Then he read Chaitanya Charitamrita and he read it again. Now imagine you get a Srimad Bhagavatam and you read it cover to cover twice in a short period of time. And within a year after receiving that copy, he delivered a paper. This is the caliber of his power, to a group of scholars, his peers, where the message that he was writing was that any great literature of a period of time is nothing but a rewrite of scriptural texts. And he gave as an example Paradise Lost and Paradise Regained by John Milton, because during that time John Milton was a popular British writer. But he shared, and with some explanation, simply biblical teaching, Paradise Lost and Paradise Regained. So similarly, Greek culture, it's a parallel with Vedic culture. There's like lots of evidence of that. Lots of evidence of that. So in any case, what Bhaktivinoda Thakur did in this text was he did something similar to that kind of presentation, where in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life, I think there's a slide that says this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu liked to take the position where his devotee would teach and he would ask questions. The devotee would say, you're the speaker and I'm the puppet. You're having me speak as you wish. But that, for your pleasure, I'll speak as you wish. You're making me speak. So Ramananda Roy, he did like that. He asked Ramananda Roy questions about the goal of life. And Ramananda Roy spoke. And by the time he was done, he said, I've never even thought these thoughts before. But you're illumining my tongue and my heart, and so I'm speaking words that you wish me to speak. As Lord Chaitanya did like that with Ramananda Roy, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it was taking Haridas Thakur, that Lord Chaitanya was asking Haridas Thakur about the glories of the Holy Name. And Lord Chaitanya was the one who was having Haridas Thakur speak his message. That's very nice. That was his method. And there's an important pastime, which we shared on Monday, but I'll say it again because it's footnoted here, this item number B. A long description of takes nearly a full chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Sanatana Goswami was living in Vrindavan under the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that he wanted to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so he traveled by foot all the way from Vrindavan. If you know your geography, it's a long walk, all the way from Vrindavan to Puri. In the course of that travel, he drank some water that he shouldn't have, and his body developed a disease. The particular kind of disease was a disease where his body had sores. And there's different kinds of sores that your body can have, some that are just dry and itchy, and some that are wet, or they ooze something. You know, in this case, it was smelly, sticky substance. And he felt really bad, not just because, oh, my body doesn't look nice. He was thinking, whenever Lord Chaitanya sees me, he wants to embrace me. And if Lord Chaitanya embraces me in this condition, I'll smear this yucky stuff on his body. So he didn't know what to do. He was contemplating. It's a long narration. He decided in his mind as he was traveling to Puri, I'll go to see Lord Jagannath's Rath Yatra. He'll come out of the temple, because he wouldn't go in the temple, but when he comes out of the temple, then I'll see him on the cart. I'll throw my body before the wheel of Lord Jagannath. The wheel will crush my body, and I'll give up the body. So before the Rath Yatra took place, he hadn't said anything to anybody. Lord Chaitanya said, you can't do this. He knew his mind. Said, you've given your body to me, you can't take it away. It's for my service. And if it was simple as to go back to Godhead as throwing our body before the wheel of Lord Jagannath, we'd all do it. But that's not how you go back to Godhead. It's how you become a ghost. So don't do that. So he couldn't do that. Anyway, there were a series of things that happened. He had this idea, he had that idea, he had another idea. Lord Chaitanya told him, no, you can't do that, you can't do the other one, you can't do the other one. So he was stuck. He was going to leave. Lord Chaitanya said, you can't leave. I want you to stay. And then he embraced Sanatana Goswami. And when he embraced Sanatana Goswami, the sores went away, like a miracle cure. It's a long narration. And he was astounded, and Haridas Thakur saw this right before his eyes, this, you know, miracle cure. Religions are made out of miracle cures. There's so many of them. Lord Chaitanya did things like that. So Haridas Thakur said, Sanatana Goswami, you are so dear to Lord Chaitanya. He orchestrated this whole circumstance just so that you would have no other shelter but his mercy. And then he took away the problem. Then just left with Lord Chaitanya's mercy. You are so dear to him. And Sanatana Goswami said, Haridas, you are the one most dear to Lord Chaitanya. Because he came to deliver the holy name and he selected you as the acharya for the chanting of the holy name. Some devotees are very good in their behavior, but they can't speak so well. Some devotees can speak very well, but they aren't very good in their behavior. But Haridas, you're perfect in both. You're the most dear to Lord Chaitanya. Doesn't say what Haridas said after that, but that's how the chapter ends. There's some other footnotes here. We discussed these on Monday, so I'm not going to do Monday's class on Friday. We'll go back and listen to the recording. He was a very special devotee. In the first three chapters in sequence, as mentioned, there's the inconceivable glories of the holy name, chapter 1. Acceptance of the holy name, very important chapter, Monday evening. And chanting the holy name free from impersonalist misconceptions or the consequence of chanting otherwise. And then the next 10 chapters, 4 through 13, describe the 10 offenses in order to get to pure chanting, and then the last two chapters are the pure chanting. The process of practicing devotion that ends up in spontaneous love for Krishna. So here's the first verse of chapter 1. Gadai Gauranga Jaya Janavad Jivana. Glory to Lord Chaitanya, to Lord Gadadhar, and to Lord Nityananda, the life of Janava Devi. Glory to Advaita, the husband of Sita. Glory to Shivas and all the devotees of the Lord. Little note that Srila Prabhupada, when he introduced deity worship, he introduced the worship of Gornatai. But prior to him, Bhaktivinod Thakur introduced the worship of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu plus Gadadhar. He called them Gaur Gadadhar deities. And it has to do something with the mood of worship. Srila Prabhupada emphasized specifically the mood of Lord Nityananda as the one who was sent by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to give the holy name throughout all of Bengal, and by then getting that ecstatic love for Krishna from Lord Nityananda, one would get Lord Chaitanya's mercy, and by getting Lord Chaitanya's mercy, one would get Radha's mercy. By getting Radha's mercy, one would get Krishna's mercy. So Prabhupada emphasized like that. Here it's Mahaprabhu and Gadadhar. So the second verse, notice here is Lord Jagannath's photograph, and this is the temple, the spire of the Jagannath temple with the flag that they change colors regularly at the top of the temple, and the chakra that's up there. On the shore of the saltwater ocean in Nilachala, in a beautiful temple, the Supreme Personality of Godhead descended to this world and assumed the form of a wooden deity to deliver the conditioned souls. He gives both happiness and liberation. That's Lord Jagannath down here. That's who he's speaking of. Third verse. In this holy abode, Lord Chaitanya stayed at Kashi Mishra's home to bless the human race, to teach the heart of the true religion meant for Kali Yuga. This is Lord Chaitanya and some of his associates along the shore of the sea. There's the temple in the background where Lord Chaitanya was in a state of ecstasy and madness, and they were just following him to make sure he didn't fall in the sea, speaking glories of Krishna and exhibiting symptoms of ecstasy that were otherworldly, make it simple. One day, after bathing in the sea, Lord Chaitanya met Haridas. There's Haridas. Under a Siddha Bakul tree. We spoke about the Siddha Bakul tree on Monday. Happy at heart, he earnestly asked, how may the conditioned souls be easily delivered? That's a nice place to begin the conversation. And this is the book that I'm referring to, the Bhagavat, its philosophy, its ethics, and its theology. In Chaitanya Charitamrita Antilila, there's... See, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's methodology. He wrote a book, and in this text, he's doing what his book says, that great texts simply take classical scriptural teachings and present them in some other form. So here's Lord Chaitanya in Anjalila chapter 3 asking Haridas the same question. How will these yavanas be delivered? Yavanas means people that they're not vegetarian. To my great unhappiness, I do not see any way. And Haridas, of course, gave in these successive verses the method of the chanting of the holy name. Then Lord Chaitanya asked another question. On this earth, there are many living entities, some moving and some not moving. What will happen to the trees, plants, insects, and other living entities? How will they be delivered from material bondage? First was, you know, how will humans, then what about all the other species of life? And Haridas Thakur's answer was, why are you asking this question? They're already delivered. You've come into this world and they're delivered just by your being present. And Lord Chaitanya said, Haridas, consider what you're saying. I see lots of trees and plants and insects. He said, it's true. Those ones that were here, they went back to Godhead, and the non-moving living entities have now taken that place. It's true. This is my realization. You have preached the loud chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and in this way freed all moving and non-moving living entities from material bondage. That's Haridas speaking to Lord Chaitanya about Lord Chaitanya. So this section that was, 300 years or so prior to Bhaktivinoda Thakur has now appeared in his writing, this Harinam Chintamani, following this essay that I described to you, 1869 essay. This is when he was still in his 30s. His first book about Srimad Bhagavatam. In a footnote to Harinam Chintamani on this verse, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote the book and he also wrote some footnotes. So this is a translation of his footnote. From Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, from Ramananda Roy's mouth, this is the Kaveri River where Lord Chaitanya was discussing the goal of life. Ramananda Roy described rasa. From Sarva Bhuma Bhattacharya's mouth came the description of liberation. He's not pictured here. From Sri Rupa's mouth came the analysis of different rasas. From Sri Haridasa's mouth came the glories of the holy name. He's following that pattern of Lord Chaitanya's way of delivering transcendental messages into this world he had his disciples do.
Can you repeat that?
Huh?
Can you repeat that?
The text here?
This
is Ramananda Roy. He was the governor of Madras and that large tract of land, not just the city. He described, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he described rasa. Of course, he's saying also, Rupa Goswami did as well. But what the goal of life? That was his question. And it led to higher and 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 higher stages of rasa. And then, and Radharani in the different higher stages of Radharani's ecstasy. The Ramananda Roy. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the process of liberation, or the stage of genuine liberation. There's not time to go into what those discussions were. Rupa Goswami, different rasas. Haridas Thakur, the glories of the holy name. Weeping and weeping, the hairs of his body erect and humbly grasping the Lord's feet, saintly Haridas said, Master, your pastimes are very deep. So, very important. The first expression from Haridas's mouth is humility. Because the quality that Lord Chaitanya said in order to chant constantly, which Haridas was chanting constantly, very pronounced must be humility and tolerance. So here's this humility and tolerance. Lord Chaitanya is asking Haridas to deliver Lord Chaitanya's teachings to the teacher. Your pastimes are very deep. I am very poor. I have no wealth of knowledge. Your feet are my only wealth. O Master, what good result will you gain by suddenly asking this question of such an unfit person? Humility. So a little statement. Loving obedience to God begins with humility. I was just reading a section from Jiva Goswami's writings in Bhakti Sandarbha, long narration on the overcoming offenses against the holy name, which we'll discuss on Thursday evening, same topic. But his just very, very short message from the summary, Rupa Goswami says, sin and offense are built within our system. It's just, part of material conditioning. We are like that. And an honest person will acknowledge that. So to go beyond, it requires descending mercy. But if one cannot be humble, how are you going to accept descending mercy? To break those patterns of material contamination, there must be humility. And then when there's humility, one can receive. So as Haridas is in that mood of humility, he can receive the holy name, then he can chant the holy name purely. Another statement. Humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. In fact, it's this mood that repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats throughout the Harinam Chintamani. It's the, it was the inspiration for the theme of the Japa retreat that I'm going to be presenting in central New Jersey over January 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. That's the theme. So it, that when reading transcendental literature, one kind of reading that, you know, we've all experienced because we got very well trained up in the education process, that you gather information that you can then present again, you know, more or less consistently with what was given to you, and then you can get an A in your exam. We're all trained up how to do that. You know, information gathering and then representing, kind of maybe with a little analysis and something like that. But far beyond that is the process of hearing with the mood. This is very important. Hearing with the mood that the message is meant for us. And it's meant to elevate us. So we can appreciate that Haridas is expressing himself in a very humble way. The instruction and the application point is we should also become like that. And what's the standard of what real humility is? Well, Haridas sets the standard. And there's the false kind of humility, thinking less of yourself, and there's the true kind of humility, thinking of yourself less. Thinking of the greatness of Lord Chaitanya. And so in relationship with Lord Chaitanya, he, Haridas, is thinking, I'm quite insignificant. So why are you asking me to speak this awesome message? You are the Supreme Lord Krishna. To deliver the conditioned souls, you have descended to Navadvipa. Please be merciful. Please be kind. Oh, Lord Gaura, please protect me. Please make my heart blossom with happiness. Your names have no end. Your transcendental qualities have no end. Your form is an ocean of bliss. Your pastimes have no end. Please be merciful and allow this sinner to relish the sweetness in them. Your name, your lotus feet, your form, your pastimes. The message here, part of the message, is that Lord Chaitanya is the same as Lord Krishna. This is a long description, but in the short of it is, Krishna came to teach the message of Bhagavad Gita, and the concluding message of Bhagavad Gita is to surrender to Krishna. Lord Chaitanya came to teach how to surrender to Krishna by doing it himself as a devotee of Krishna. And through Haridas, he's teaching the same. Specifically, how to surrender to the holy name of Krishna. But receiving the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the key. And receiving the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requires humility, which Haridas has to the maximum. Text 10. You are the spiritual sun. I am a single ray of your sunlight. You are the master. I am your eternal servant. The nectar of your feet is my wealth of pleasure. My desires rest on the nectar of your holy names. And so, again, this is understanding our position. Humility is easy if you understand your position. And conversely, if you don't, it's really easy to have a wrong understanding of position. It obscures our relationship with Krishna. So humility is necessary to have proper understanding. of our relationship with Krishna. Oh, Master, I am fallen. How will I know what to say? Still, I must obey your command. The words you place in my mouth, I will happily speak. I will not try to judge their virtues or faults. And in the verse, this is Bengali, but it's very close to Sanskrit, dosha guna na kari ganana. Dosha means faults and guna means qualities or virtues. I'll just speak. I'm not going to measure my words. Try to get praise from you about, oh, you've spoken nice words. I'm just going to speak whatever you wish me to speak. I'm like Prabhupada said when he has a rival prayer in Boston Harbor, I'm like a puppet and you can make me speak, make me dance, whatever you like. I'm your instrument. And as the instrument plays, the instrument doesn't judge, you know, the player of the instrument. He just does the instrument part. That's how Haridas is seeing his position. That's an essential, that's a byproduct of humility. When we act, then that's the mood, just as the instrument. It's really easy to forget it. It's too easy to forget it. It's genuine humility. You can't just put on like a cosmetic or, you know, winter jacket. It's something that's from within. And if it's not from within, it doesn't endure. So that's the beginning part before Haridas begins speaking. And as he begins, those that are a little bit familiar with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, out of these 100 books, I once gave a course for 1 month on this topic, Dasamula Tattva. And this is so, it's the 10. Dasa means 10. Mula means root. And Tattva means truth, or truths. The 10 essential truths that are the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And out of the 100 books, at least I counted 36 of those 100 books that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote about Dasamula Tattva. One example is at the very year of Srila Prabhupada's birth, 1896, was the same year. Remember that first, the Bhagavad, its philosophy, ethics, and something else? It was 1867. In 1896, some 32 years later, 29 years later, whatever it was, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote a book in English. And the title of it was Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts. So it was two parts. His life, little summary of his life from Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then the other half was his precepts. And his precepts were this, what Lord Chaitanya taught. So now here in Harinam Chintamani, written in Bengali, but now available in English, he is describing these truths about Lord Krishna. So here we go. Krishna Tattva Eka Matra Icha Maya Krishna Sarveshwara Nitya Shakti Yoge Krishna Vibhu Paratapara. Lord Krishna, there he is. Lord Krishna is the one supreme personality of Godhead. There is no other. His every desire is always fulfilled. He is eternal. He is the master of all potencies. He is greater than the greatest. He's not only the greatest, he's greater than the greatest. I won't describe the Leela because this this session takes a long time. So here's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's own commentary or footnote on this verse. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is supremely independent. His desires are always fulfilled. He possesses inconceivable potencies. I'm not going to read the whole thing. The truth is that Brahman is the effulgence of Lord Krishna's body. The followers of Ashtanga Yoga see Krishna as the all-pervading subtle super soul, so Brahman and Paramatma realization. In truth, Lord Krishna does manifest himself as a avatar of himself, or as the super soul, Ansha avatar. Therefore, Brahman and Paramatma are both partial manifestations of Lord Krishna. So when we speak of Krishna, it means the original form from which expansions may come. His qualities, especially the bhakta, vatsala quality, are outstanding. What does that mean? His bhakta, vatsala quality means Krishna is especially kind and affectionate and loving towards those who are especially kind and affectionate towards him. It's quite natural. He reciprocates. That's quite natural. So it's one of his most outstanding. He's equal to everybody, but those that hold him very dear to them, he holds them very dear to him. He's very affectionate to his devotee, Bhakta Vatsala. All of his spiritual powers and glories are not material, even though they may be manifested within the material world. They are not themselves material. Can you recognize who this is? There's Mahaprabhu, so it's not...
Hungary.
Yeah. Radha Shyam Sundar in Hungary. Radharani has her parasol. Normally she's holding a garland, but here she's holding her parasol. And note that the Hungarian artist is making this very beautiful backdrop. Very beautiful. So the deity form is one of the forms that Krishna accepts. One may see the deity form as material, but one should understand by spiritual potency, the deity form is also spiritual. So here's text 21. Lord Krishna's powers and glories are Lord Krishna himself. There's a non-difference relationship between his powers and glories and himself. Again and again, the Vedas use the word Vishnu Pada. Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu himself, or Lord Vishnu's feet, to describe these powers and glories. Haridas speaking. Nice artwork, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I didn't do it. Somebody else did it. Very nice. So how do we access Krishna and his glories and his powers and his majesty and everything? We access him through his devotees. And that text is so small I can't even read it.
Seeing
Vaishnavas
is made possible by the medium of his phenomena.
Or anupava.
Mm-hmm.
His energies
are the roots of the
Vaibhav.
Okay. So this is... Sorry about it. I don't know why it's so small. Vaibhava. He's using this word Vaibhava here, and here Vaibhava. That's the... how we access Krishna is through his paraphernalia or his devotees, his paraphernalia or vaibhava. So Krishna makes access to him possible. He's in a transcendental position, but he makes access to him possible through those who represent him or his paraphernalia. Just like, you know, here in deity worship or you know, or scripture or musical instruments, which are manifestations of Lord Balaram and so forth. We can access Krishna through these. And we're meant, Krishna is very kind, we're meant to do that. Lord Krishna's spiritual powers and glories are situated in pure goodness. They are Lord Krishna himself. He wants us to understand. Haridas Thakur wants us to understand. Because it's getting to the name is also fully transcendental, but not only the name, the powers and glories of Krishna are similarly Shuddha Sattva, completely beyond. No, he didn't say this. That's not in Harinam Chintami. But Lord Krishna is not a transformation of matter. Part of the Dasamula Tattva is Krishna is in this pure goodness position. You know, from creation comes from life, or life comes from life, not life comes from matter. Krishna is beyond matter. There's Krishna, and he's beyond matter down here. He expands himself within it, and then by his presence, life may manifest. He controls material nature, but he's not controlled by material nature. His body is not a product of material nature. His activities are not a product of material nature. His qualities are not a product of material nature. His name is not a material sound vibration. Lord Krishna manifests his form in different ways. Govinda, that's this, the lover of cows. And Vaikunthana, the Lord of Vaikuntha. Karana Dakshayi Vishnu, that's Karana Dakshayi Vishnu. Garbha Dakshayi Vishnu. Shiro Dakshayi Vishnu. Krishna is the source of all these forms. His original form is Anadir Adir Govinda. He manifests many other Angsa avatars or incarnations. That's down here, these Das avatars, which are all himself or of the same category, Vishnu Tattva, which are all situated, all of these are situated in pure goodness, but they have a source of emanation. These are teachings given by Haridas Thakur. And the slide changer is stuck. Oh, there we go. Let's see what happens. Oh, I know. Okay. Well. Maybe the battery is dripping out. That's what's going on.
To play the next arrow, maybe it'll go to the next.
No, I've got another battery. Time out for battery change. So, appearing in Goloka Vaikuntha, the Karana ocean, or the material world, the Lord is known as Vishnu. When he enters the material world, Lord Krishna remains the controller of matter. The name Vishnu still refers to him. He is still all-powerful. Now, Krishna doesn't become covered. Murali Krishna, you want to change that? He is still the master of all the demigods. He is still the controller of Maya. Maya is still his property. He's still situated in pure goodness. This painting, this illustration, is the pastime of Mother Yashoda looking inside Krishna's mouth because Balaram over there on the left and the other cowherd boys. What happened? Balaram and the other cow. Whoa. The cowherd boys over here, they said that Krishna had eaten dirt. And Krishna said, it's not true, they're lying, I didn't eat dirt. And they insisted, no, he's eaten dirt. So Mother Yashoda became the peacemaker, and she said, all right, you say you haven't eaten dirt, let me see inside your mouth. And when she looked inside Krishna's mouth, she saw the entire cosmic manifestation inside Krishna's mouth, because within Krishna is everything. So even though he's in this world, he's not contaminated by matter. Rather, it's the other way around. Maya is his property. Even he's performing pastimes that may look like a little boy goes and eats dirt. You're not a little boy. He's a transcendental supreme person. He goes on, chapter 1, text 28. Here's demigods going to the shore of the milk ocean. There's Lord Brahma offering prayers to Lord Vishnu to appear on earth. So Brahma, here's a painting of Lord Shiva and Parvati. One pastime when Lord Chaitanya was traveling in South India, they very much wanted Lord Chaitanya's darshan, so he kindly gave his blessings to them. So he, Lord Chaitanya, or the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, they're beyond the modes. The others are situated within the modes. Vishnu is beyond the modes of nature. Distinction of these two entities. Haridas goes on. O Lord, your Vishnu tattva forms, your Vishnu dham abodes, and your transcendental pastimes are all manifested by your spiritual powers and glories. Again, here's this word, chit vaibhav, spiritual opulences, fully spiritual. O Lord, your Vishnu tattva forms, oops, the same verse, but differently illustrated. So here's some of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. The centerpiece is this pastime of Krishna stealing the garments of the gopis as they were bathing early in the month of Magh. So here's an artist's illustration of, here's one universe amongst countless numbers of universes emanating from the body of Karanadakshai Vishnu, who's lying in the Karana ocean, and on the perimeters of this Karana ocean is also known as the Viraja River. And then there's on the other side of the, so this side is the material energy, and then there's this river Viraja, and the other side is the spiritual sky, the Brahma Jyoti, and then the spiritual planets. So, O Lord, on the farther bank of the Viraja River is your material power and glory, which consists of 14 worlds. So he's describing Krishna's abode, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's qualities, Krishna's opulences. Then there's this Viraja River, and then there's on the other side of the river. That's this place, the material realm. Oops, that's backwards, sorry. So here's now going into one of those universes. At the bottom of the universe is Garbhadakshai Vishnu, who's reclining on the Anantashesha. The hoods of Anantashesha are holding up the planetary systems, 14 in number. Down at the bottom here is not a nice place, Patala Loka. Here's where we are, in this Bhu Mandala, and then Bhuvar Mandala. And then Svargaloka, Viharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Brahmaloka. And we're still in the material world, in Brahmaloka. So here it is. In this realm are Bhur, Bhuvar, and Swargaloka, there's the upper. Below these worlds are seven, which begin with Atala Loka and Sutala. That's Atala and Sutala down here. O Master, of all these worlds, please hear of your material powers and glories. Those of you, well, I'm familiar with Dasamuvatattva. He says, in a narrative form, describing Lord Chaitanya's teaching, Dasamuvatattva, Haridas Thakur is explaining Lord Chaitanya's teachings, the ten teachings. So one of them is, he has inconceivable potencies, which include spiritual and material potencies of the living entity that's marginal. So we're going to get to the marginal part in just a minute. Your material powers and glories are shadows of your spiritual powers and glories. These worlds are the power and glory of Maya. They are called Devi Dham. They are made of five gross elements and the subtle material elements of mind, intelligence, and false ego. This is showing the seven coverings of the universe, what they are, each one 10 times bigger, so it's not proportionate. And then there's the interior of the universe, you know, the sky with all the planets and the bottom half being the Garbhadak Ocean and so on. It gives dimensions, 500 million yojanas, or 4 billion miles. That's the diameter of the inside of the universe. It's a big universe. Here's the breakdown. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether, mind, intelligence, and pradhan. So just to get an idea, Sataputta once did a calculation and said in his calculation, if the interior, you know, this side to that side of a universe was the size of a ball bearing or a marble, if you did the 10 times 10 times 10 times, you know, the coverings of the universe would be the distance between Delhi and Calcutta. So the inside of the universe is not the, you know, the size of a ball bearing. It's 4 billion miles in diameter, times 10 times 10 times. So the coverings of the universe are really big, really big, really big. Bhakti notes footnote: the earthly planets are made of five material elements. The gross material bodies of the conditioned souls are also made of five material elements. Gross matter. The conditioned souls, mind, intelligence, and false ego, are his subtle material body. It is also made of matter. The individual soul, which is a spiritual spark, is by nature situated in pure goodness. In his original form, he has a mind, intelligence, and ego that are made of pure goodness. These are spiritual. They are different from the subtle material body. Now, why is he doing all this? These are teachings to help us understand the glories of the Holy Name. The Holy Name has nothing to do with, you know, the material coverings and the material existence. The Holy Name of Krishna can carry us all the way to his supreme abode. Just bring your consciousness and touch it. Unfortunately, our consciousness is not touching it. Our consciousness is all over the place. But the power of the Holy Name is such it can carry us there. So there's the individual spirit soul. And we have this individual spirit soul has relationship with Krishna. The individual spirit souls are tiny fragments of Krishna's spiritual potency. Because they are spiritual in nature, the individual souls possess free will. They're spiritual like Krishna, presents unlimited free will. Here's this guy. He's saying no to Krishna. So he comes into the material atmosphere. There's no end to the number of individual souls. They are motivated by desire to find pleasure. Now, there's pleasure here, but to say no to this pleasure, then you get this variety. Big mistake. So, this is part of Dasamula. There's two categories. There's some that are eternally liberated, mukta jivas. The souls who seek pleasure by associating with Krishna are liberated souls. They're Krishna's companions. Then there's another kind. The soul who thinks he'll be happy independently will yearn to stay by the side of Maya. That's this guy. That's us. Turning their faces away from the eternal Lord Krishna, these souls enter into the realm of Devidam, where they attain material bodies fashioned by Maya. So this is the second category. This is directly the teachings. And then once they are there, there's the wheel of karma. They fall into the wheel of pious deeds and sins. Residing in gross and subtle material bodies, they continually wander in that world. Sometimes they rise to Swargaloka, and other times they fall into hell. They wander and wander in 16,000, exactly 8,400,000, but that's what his language says. We left it, 16,000 species of life. Even so, Krishna gives his mercy. There's the boats of Lord Chaitanya giving the holy name to the living entities who are drowning in the ocean of material existence. You are the Supreme Lord, and the individual souls are your potencies. You always think of your servants' welfare. You kindly bestow whatever happiness your servants seek. In whatever condition the individual soul may find himself, the Supreme Lord is always his friend and always fulfills his desires. The relationship between the Supreme Lord and the individual soul is eternal. But we're forgetful. And so there's descending knowledge that comes to us from the Supreme Lord, and through the line of disciplic succession, we get mercy. Then comes this phrase from the Padma Purana verse, Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. His holy name penetrates through many layers of ignorance. These are like a long cave, and there's way at the far end, the light of the holy name. Purna Shuddho Nitya Mukto Abhinatvam Namino. Even so, Lord Krishna gives his mercy to them. Our Lord is most munificent. Sorry, speaking. And delighted. So, the chapter is almost done. There's different ways of approaching the Supreme. One is this one. Please give us stuff. Here's demigod worship where they want money and jewels and wealth and prosperity and long life and good beauty and all those nice things. By your mercy, the souls who desire temporary material happiness easily attain it. You created dharma, yajna, yoga, homa, vratas, which are the auspicious activities, or shubha karma, that brings material happiness. These auspicious activities are all material. They're not spiritual. By performing them, one attains material benefits. By their power, one attains material pleasures and residence in the higher material worlds. Enjoying the results of these material actions, one does not attain spiritual peace. The struggle to attain material goals is a great mistake. By performing these auspicious material activities, one attains only temporary material pleasures. You're holding that up so we can't see the screen.
Sorry.
So here comes wealth, here comes health, here comes rain, here comes the moonshine that helps grow vegetables. So, you know, whatever you want, here it comes. But these benedictions that come from the demigods, ultimately, the ability for them to give whatever they give, comes from Krishna.
Okay, but I'm desperate for it.
God bless your home equity line of credit. Anyway, Hare Krishna. I didn't make this.
Don't know. Please give me 5,000 back.
So there's the material condition, and we're given the way to rise above the material condition. There's Prabhupada giving his association to a very interesting assembly of people, just sitting on a humble straw mat and presenting the teachings of devotion to various audiences. Or Vaisheshika Prabhu out on book distribution, giving to very happy recipients of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and Ishopanishad. If by associating with devotees he understands, I'm a pure spirit soul, Lord Krishna's servant, then the soul can cross beyond the world of Maya. So the scriptures deliver the message and devotees deliver the scriptures that deliver the message. By their kindness. This is the way to rise above the condition. There's another aspiration some people have, that's the happiness of merging into Brahman, that comes from the Jnana Kanda section of the Vedas. He went through the Karma Kanda, now there's this one. For the sake of these people, merciful Lord Krishna gives the philosophy of Brahman in the Jnana Kanda part of the Vedas. They attain a stunted kind of liberation. Oh Lord, Brahman is the effulgence of your body. It shines on the farther bank of the Viraja River. The impersonalists wish to merge into it. The demons, who's this one? Maybe. We know what that one is. Where is he? Okay, there's Kaliya Krishna, there's Kaliya Keshi. Anyway, the demons killed by Krishna also cross to the farther bank of Maya and merge into Brahman. The souls who have turned their face from Lord Krishna are these two types. This fellow over here looks like euros, right? It's not dollars. Americans aren't greedy like that. And Gyanis, impersonalists, have both turned their faces away from Lord Krishna. They never taste the pleasures of service to Lord Krishna. So then Haridas asks, if karma and gyan are not pious, what are the best pious deeds? Devotional service. Devotional activities performed by one eager for devotional service are the best of pious deeds. Their fruit is that the soul attains association with devotees. This is a standard teaching that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it's found in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in fact. Different kinds of sukriti. So material, impersonal, and devotional. So this footnote of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is similar to what is found in Chaitanya Charitamrita. In fact, Prabhupada quotes it from Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his purport. Bhakti Anmukhi Sukriti, you remember that purport? Material happiness that comes from material piety. Moksha Anmukhi Sukriti that comes from study of Vedanta Sutra and the Upanishads and so forth. And that, but this bhakti and mukhi sukriti awakens faith in bhakti. So what's an example of bhakti and mukhi sukriti? Who can think of one? Unknowingly somebody does some devotional service.
Camp,
we have
a friend,
you know,
maybe helping
us. Okay. Or they're helping you. You get out of the cab and you give him some prasadam.
The landlord coming to fix the door of the altar in my apartment.
Okay.
He wanted to do it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
A passerby just dropping a dollar bill and dying
up. Yeah.
Doing pulling the rope in the Jagannath Rath.
Yeah. Area. Just even seeing Lord Jagannath passing by and standing and saying, oh, isn't that nice? And then they drink there or whatever and eat there or whatever. Just that unknowingly appreciation of Lord Jagannath's Rath Yatra Festival. That's a nice example. You stop and, you know, you ask for directions. How do we get to such and such? And the guy says, you go that way. Oh, thank you. That devotional service. If you're in the mission of Lord Chaitanya's service, just have to say yes to Lord Chaitanya's service or Krishna's service. And someone assists in that which you're engaged in, unknowingly, just because they're pious, they want to help you fix the latch on your altar door or whatever it is. I'd like to do that. And that's the beginning of their devotional service. One of the classic ones that right here at 26 Second Avenue, you've probably all heard this story. Through that door, one drunk came staggering through the program and right in the middle of Prabhupada sitting here and speaking, and he went right into the bathroom and put some rolls of toilet paper and staggered out. Right in the middle of the class. And the people wanted to, you know, bounce him on his head. And Prabhupada said, no, his devotional service has begun. He wasn't doing it, you know, let me do some devotional service for Krishna. Who knows, you know, they had given him some prasadam or they treated him kindly or who knows what it was that inspired him to do that. But whatever it was, then, you know, just his devotional service began. Or people passed by the Harinam party. There's a lot of people that pass by the Harinam party. Even if they don't stop. What to speak of if they stop and appreciate, oh, this is very nice. You know, sometimes they don't say, this is very nice. But even that, their devotional service has begun. A faithful person who associates with Lord Krishna's devotees attains a taste for the holy name. He becomes merciful to other souls. He walked on the path of devotional service. This is a very pleasant moment. Prabhupada was telling a story and everyone's laughing. I think there was a drama that was on the other side. Prabhupada was sitting in his rocking chair making a comment. So we receive Krishna's mercy, and then having received Krishna's mercy, we just share Krishna's mercy with others. That's the process. Reciprocal process. Interesting painting. You know, Krishna's holding our japa finger. Come on back to Godhead. Okay. Who is that? Who is all those people? Aryashvas. 10,000. There's no loudspeaker system. Narada Muni was speaking to these sons of Daksha, and he was examining to see if they were qualified to become grahasthas or if they were qualified to remain renunciates, and their spiritual understanding was so sharp. He understood they're fit recipients directly for bhakti, They don't need to be involved in household affairs. So he invited them to his bhakti program and his ashram. We need a bigger ashram, the Haridav ashram, for 10,000. You can only give what you allow yourself to receive. You can only receive what you're willing to give. This is the nice little saying. But the reciprocal process of bhakti is receiving mercy and then extending that mercy. It's both are essential, not only one or only the other. These are teaching from the first chapter. We're almost done with the chapter. Out of mercy to the karmis and gyanis, the Lord creates the path of indirect devotional service. This term, gona dharma, is a term that Bhaktivinoda Thakur used, that also Bhaktisiddhanta used. If you read Brahma Samhita, you'll find this term, gona dharma. It is as it says, it's indirect. So when you do something, there's direct. What direct means, the nine processes of bhakti. You know, hearing, chanting, remembering, praying, worshipping, etc. The nine processes of bhakti. And then there's things that we do in our life. We go to work. You know, according to our nature, we have an occupation. And we have an ashram, maybe this or that ashram. But it's a description of our worldly circumstance, our worldly condition. That's gona dharma. So out of mercy, this gona dharma, or indirect devotional service, is given when connected with the direct activities of hearing and chanting. Bhaktisiddhanta writes, it's a very nice statement, those activities become as purifying as the direct activities of bhakti. This is the Lord's mercy. So for those who are inclined towards fruitive work or being involved in affairs of this world, one can become elevated and purified. So there's karma mixed with bhakti, and here's jnana mixed with bhakti, and then there's shuddha bhakti. By devotee's mercy, a pious jnani easily attains faith in pure devotional service. O Lord, you say, quote, my servant has now fallen into the sufferings of Maya. Turning away from me, he now desires petty, unimportant things. I know what is truly good for him. I'll make him turn away from sense gratification and impersonal liberation. I will give him devotional service. In the Kali Yuga, the path of indirect devotional service, going to bhakti, is very difficult. Looks pretty difficult over there, doesn't it? Looks pretty difficult over here too, doesn't it? Whether it's, you know, destruction or sense gratification, so-called enjoyment, ignorance and passion are too much abundant, and there's this big fire in between them. It's not just the factory smoke. It's very dangerous, this indirect. And so, as far as possible, we're recommended for the where it's leading to is the process, the merciful process of chanting. That's how the chapter ends. That's the punchline. In the Sakya Yuga, how many sages diligently practiced the yoga of meditation? O Supreme Lord, you purified them and gave them the treasure of devotional service to you. We know who this is. It's Dhruva. Who is this one? Kardama Muni. There's Dhruva again. So, you know, in the process of, in Satya Yuga, there was a lot of austerity and a lot of focus of the mind, you know, a lot of mode of goodness. And Krishna reciprocated. Then in Treta Yuga, many souls became purified by performing yajna. In Dwarapa Yuga, they walked the path of deity worship. So there's Ramchandra, who exists during this Treta Yuga period, and then deity worship during Dwapara Yuga. You freely gave them devotional service. Oh Lord, when Kali Yuga came, the conditioned souls became unfortunate. Seeing this, you made them lose faith in Gyan, Karma, and Yoga. Their lives were short. They suffered many troubles. Their intelligence and strength were reduced. These obstacles devoured the conditioned souls. A little story behind this painting, maybe some of you have seen it before. There's an artist during Lord Chaitanya's life who was commissioned by the king, Prataparudra, to paint a portrait of Lord Chaitanya. This is the painting. Pretty enchanting, huh? No digital photos, but here's a painting. Varnashram Dharma, Sankhya, Yoga, and Jnana have no power to deliver the conditioned soul in Kali Yuga. This is, you know, the senses being pulled in different directions, to taste something, to see something, to hear something, to smell something, to touch something. The mind is spinning, brain is popping out. In Kali Yuga, the path of indirect devotional service mixed with karma or gyan, becomes like a difficult path, a path overgrown with thorns. Who wants to walk on that path?
No.
No, thank you. And it's very dry. By following this path, the soul finds many obstacles in his life. Very perplexing. The holy name is the direct path. And at any age and in any condition, look at the sincere chanter. Calling out for Krishna. So many sincere devotees calling Krishna's name very heartily. Oh, Supreme Lord, thinking how to benefit the conditioned souls in Kali Yuga, you descended in this world with the holy name. You taught that Nam Sankirtan is the Yuga Dharma. By following this direct path of chanting the holy name, the conditioned souls attain a great treasure of love for Lord Krishna. Well, remember the question, what's the means of deliverance? Simply by chanting or remembering the holy name, the conditioned souls will become delivered. The goal and the way to attain it are not different. They are both the holy name. In chanting the holy name, the goal and the way to attain it are not different. In this path, there are no obstacles in the way to attain the goal. O Lord, by your mercy, the conditioned souls easily attain the goal. I'm going quickly because it's already 8 o'clock. This is the end. I am fallen. This is where he starts and where he ends. I'm plunged in an ocean of material sense objects. Oh Lord, I'm such a fool that I did not worship your holy name. Sighing and tears streaming from his eyes, Brahma Haridas fell before Lord Chaitanya's feet. May this book, Harinam Chintamani, become the very life and soul, the very life of the souls whose only joy is devotional service to Lord Krishna and his devotees. This is Lord Chaitanya instructing, and of course, Haridas Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the corner of this little photo. So these are glories, this is chapter one, glories of the holy name. And hearing, if one hears these glories of the holy name, it inspires, it opens the heart to want to accept the holy name and take shelter of the holy name. So that's how chapter two begins. these glories that Haridas, that you've described, they're so wonderful. How does one receive this holy name? Come around on Monday night. Hear what Haridas Thakur says. So any questions or comments? Yes?
The conversation between Haridas Thakur and Mahaprabhu took place many years before Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So how did he know about this conversation? How did he know what to write?
Revelation. One of the last books that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, one of the last books was Bhagavat Arka Marichi Mala. Just to give an idea of what platform of devotional service Bhaktivinoda Thakur was operating on, at the end of the book, he writes an addendum. And the addendum goes something like this. Normally, one should not disclose very confidential things. But I feel compelled that by the mercy of my spiritual master, Sarup Damodar came to me and instructed me to write this book. And he gave me the special benediction that he explained the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's included in the beginning part of this book. And I'm only disclosing these things because it would be unjust of me to take credit for the book when it was just instructed to me by such a great soul. He was on a platform of devotional service that was not ordinary. Now, he didn't write such an addendum after this one. Haridas Thakur came to me and told me to write this book. But another way to look at it, even if one looks at it this other way, which is as that book, the text towards the beginning, the Bhagavad, its ethics and theology and something, it's essentially a rewrite of Antyalila chapter 3. Now, how did Krishnadas Kaviraj knew? Krishnadas Kaviraj knew because Krishnadas Kaviraj heard from Raghunath Das. How did Raghunath Das know? Because he was in the care of Sarup Damodar, who had direct association with Haridas. So that's how he knew what Lord Chaitanya and Haridas spoke about through Sarup Damodar. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one can also think, Bhaktivinoda Thakur reading that literature, he took it and put it in a context that makes it easy for the reader to understand. It's just a rewrite of what's already there in Antyalila chapter 3. But it's not, you know, creative writing 101. It's taking the scriptural text and presenting it for his contemporary audience. Either way. Anything else? Yes?
Maharaj, early on when you were explaining Chintamani, that everything in the spiritual world is made of Chintamani,
yes,
conscious, how is it that we have this notion of inferior Prakriti? How could anything that is Krishna, comes from Krishna, the atoms of which even in this world have Paramatma, how could that ever be inferior?
Easy. Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Think I am.
Because the distinction primarily is the marginal energy and the superior energy are both conscious, and matter is not conscious.
Isn't it though?
Is matter conscious?
I mean, it's got Paramatma in it.
Yeah, but that matter is not conscious. Paramatma is within the matter. But the matter is not, the energy is not conscious. Let's do this. I'm answering your question in a different way, but it's exactly the same answer. Is the soul And there's a multiple choice question. A, B, or C. Is the soul is conscious? That's A. The soul is consciousness? B. The soul is both conscious and consciousness? C.
C.
C. Now, what does that mean? Jiva Goswami explained it so nice, so nicely. He said, just like, to use as a metaphor, just like there's fire, and fire is luminous, but that light of the fire extends and illuminates other things. So there's fire, and there's the quality of light that extends from the fire. Similarly, the soul is conscious, and that consciousness spreads. So the soul is both conscious and consciousness. Stay tuned for, you know, the Prameya section of the Tattva Sandarbha. It just gets this very interesting language about upadis. So, consciousness is not an upadi. It's not, you know, an addition to, an attachment to, or a designation of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
Consciousness is of the soul. And the soul is conscious and consciousness.
Mm.
Now, matter is neither conscious nor consciousness. The Paramatma is within the atom, and consciousness may spread through the atom because of the presence of Paramatma. He's conscious of everything. That's a lot of stuff.
Mm.
He's conscious of everything. But the matter is not conscious. Like this body is not conscious. The body is exhibiting. It has symptoms of consciousness because of the soul's presence. And when the soul departs, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
There goes consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So matter is not conscious or consciousness. The soul is, and therefore inferior. Then there's superior, but marginal.
Mm.
That's us. We're of the superior, para prakriti, as opposed to apara prakriti. We're para prakriti, we're superior. You know that, like, I'm better than matter. Not like that. It's just a distinction of conscious as opposed to not conscious.
Mm.
But we're marginal, because we can be influenced by matter, or we can be influenced by spirit, so we're marginal.
Mm.
And Krishna is not prakriti. He's the supremely conscious being. And there's the distinction between us and Krishna.
Mm.
So to make a distinction, this is for sake of, you know, discerning one thing from another thing. Matter is distinct from the soul, although they're both prakriti.
Mm.
And how is that distinction? One is conscious, one the other is not. And one spreads consciousness, the other doesn't.
I think I got it.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's not, you know, it's not an ego comparison. It's an ontology comparison.
Mm.
State of being.
Mm-hmm.
Something else. Yes.
I had a few things, but
go ahead.
I'll start with this one. You know, my understanding of you know, this inferior versus superior is that as you said, that the superior energy has consciousness. And the inferior energy doesn't have consciousness.
That's the same thing I said, isn't it?
Right.
But
the slight difference is that, can it be said that the inferior energy, which is matter, since matter is also...
Matter is what?
Also part and parcel of Krishna.
Absolutely.
And so...
there's a quality of oneness.
Yeah, and so...
Inequality of difference.
Uh-huh. But can it be said that that matter as part and parcel of Krishna has consciousness but just doesn't manifest it? For example...
Nice try.
So I'm thinking of the fact that Hiranyakashipu, you know... No, when Lord Nrisimhadev, he...
came out of the pillar.
Out of the pillar. Because, you know, matter also
Let's try again. Let's back up. Hiranyakashipu asked, "Where are you getting your power?" I said, "I'm getting my power from the same place you are, Dad." From Vishnu. "Oh, Vishnu! Where is he?" "He's everywhere." "Is he in this pillar?"
"Yes."
He's not saying, "Is he the pillar?" "Is he in the pillar?" "He's in within the atom. He's everywhere. Dad, he's everywhere." So now, is Vishnu matter, or is matter Vishnu? They're distinct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Vishnu is everywhere, but matter is not Vishnu. So Vishnu is within every atom, but that doesn't mean matter is Vishnu.
But isn't it true that everything is a transformation of Vishnu?
Let's be very clear, please. Everything that exists comes from a source. But everything that comes from the source is not everything. You know, the floor is not Vishnu. The pillar is not Vishnu. It's inanimate. Non-conscious. I mean, not only consciousness, I just was making it simple. But, you know, spirit soul, this para prakriti, has qualities like Krishna. You know, we have free will. We have the desire for happiness. We have all the other concomitant manifestations that the Supreme Lord has because we're tiny samples of Him. Now, yes, everything that exists, including matter, including the Brahma-jyoti, whatever exists comes from one source. Because it comes from the one source doesn't mean it's the same as the source. That's impersonalism. We make distinctions of those things that come from the source. And one of the distinctions is inferior-superior, which was the starting point of this question. So matter is not conscious. You know, kind of like a dull state of consciousness. Not so. Show me where in Scripture says that matter is conscious. Dull. Conscious. It's inert. Lifeless. If what you're saying is true, then evolutionary theory would be true. It's not. It's not what Scripture says, and it's not true either. Matter doesn't, you know, consciousness, the low-level conscious matter evolves into higher-level consciousness life. Not so. It's not what our Scripture teaches.
No.
You show me some place where it says, and I'll show you 1,000 places that says otherwise. I don't know one place that says matter is like a dull state of consciousness. It's not. So just, can you hit the delete button instead of getting stuck there?
For Maya bodies.
No, I'm also thinking of the fact that, you know, because Krishna is inclusive of everything, and Krishna is consciousness.
And he has unlimited and inconceivable potencies, doesn't he? And one of them is prakriti. And there's two kinds. Mm-hmm. It's Dasamula Tattva. You're arguing against Lord Chaitanya, not just me. Two kinds of prakriti. And there's a distinction. Just, you know, go do your homework. If you feel otherwise, find me the scriptural reference that says otherwise.
Okay.
It's not so. I'll tell you ahead of time. But, you know, no harm. You can go searching and see if you can find
it.
Yeah,
I'll have to do that.
Okay. Okay. Anything else? You have something more?
I do, actually.
Okay.
We were talking about Agata Sukriti.
Okay.
And I was just wondering, you know, you were saying that, you know, by performing Agata Sukriti, that makes a person, even though they don't realize it, it makes them receptive to becoming.
That's a core part. Prabhupada didn't emphasize like that. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur consistently emphasized like that. And I'll just say it, I'll spell it out a little bit longer. Somebody's like, you know, John Q. ordinary citizen just moving around in la-la land. And he doesn't know anything about Krishna and devotional service. But by repeated opportunity to contact and again contact and unknowingly contacting a devotee and unknowingly doing some devotional service. Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches this unknowing devotional sukriti piles up to the point where at some point in time he'll voluntarily say, yes, I want to learn something more about devotional service. Prior to that, it's just these series of unknowing opportunities in occurrences in his life.
So what I was wondering, though, is there such a thing as one type of Agata Sukriti being like superior to another? Let's say taking prasadam, is that superior to like, you know, putting a roll of toilet paper in his bathroom?
I've not read anything that says something like that. One form of Agata Sukriti is superior to another form of Agata Sukriti. Other than this, you know, just scripturally speaking, access to Krishna is made most readily available through his name. So in the sense that Yuga Dharma is Nam Sankirtan, the most favorable kind, benediction-giving kind of unknowing devotional services, hearing and receiving the holy name. Now, having said that, Prabhupada laid another kind of emphasis. Our founder Acharya laid in a very, very strong emphasis on distributing his literature, because hearing the holy name without sambandha gyan, so he wanted his books widely distributed. So, you know, some people it's, you know, distribute the books, and some people it's go in Harinam. And actually they go well together. Then here's another one. You know, there was a little history here in New York. There were three events kind of close in sequence to one another, where the temple in Manhattan received a $10,000 profit. In those days, that was like knock your socks off for an event that was the Taste of New York. That's just a little history. As a young brahmachari, I was very enthusiastic to do all kinds of things. So one of the things that I did was I got permit for a spot in near the band shell, but they wouldn't give me the band shell, so I got another spot near the band shell for a festival, Hare Krishna festival in Central Park. And then it was, you know, they didn't have all the rigmarole they got now. So I had a permit. And then the Taste of Chicago was so successful, some entrepreneurs got the bright idea of having a Taste of New York in Central Park. And the spot they wanted was where our spot was. So they, you know, they negotiated a deal. We'll give you a free booth.
Okay.
If you allow us to, on that day that you have your event, do our Taste of New York. So we did. We profited more than $10,000, and that news went to Prabhupada.
Yes.
And then there was another similar event. There were some people that came to the restaurant, and there was something at Lincoln Center, and we profited, you know, another large sum of money at the event at Lincoln Center. And then there was another devotee named Sarvabhauma, who was the initial person that did orange juice from carts, when, you know, when it was like really easy to get licenses to do carts. It wasn't before, you know, all this all street vending thing. And it was like very, very profitable. And this news went to Prabhupada, and he said, New York will be conquered through prasadam distribution. But he said, oh, so, for prasadam distribution, one could say. Then your question was, is there one form more than another form?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people like prasadam. That may not so much like Harinam or books, but they really like prasadam.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more a matter of
taste.
Yeah, what their aptitude is.
Mm-hmm.
Some people really like Prina. They don't really care for... I mean, there's a group of people that come every Sunday to the Brooklyn Temple. They don't even go down and take prasadam. They just come for kirtan at night. They stay up till midnight. It is really ecstatic kirtan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You heard?
Yeah, I've experienced.
But they don't hear the class. They're not really interested in the deities. They don't even want to associate with the devotees. They don't even want prasadam. They just want to... Maybe I need somebody again. Anyway.
Whatever absorbs you. Basically.
Yes, yes. And gradually, hopefully, somebody will say, can I take a book home with me? Or maybe I'll come and hear the class too. But they don't. Over all this period of time, it's kind of unfortunate. Anyway, every now and then, there's a surprise and some people come. So the holy name, that mercy of the holy name, must be accompanied by somebody again, somehow. Probably they get a chance to associate with Nanda Govinda and Vichuta Gopi, and they give them some, mm-hmm. along with some prasadam, probably too.
Mm-hmm.
Are we finished?
No. There was just like a quickie, just a real quick thing.
A cookie?
A quickie. I was just wondering the relationship. I mean, we touched on it there. You said it was the periphery, the relationship between the Viraja River and the causal ocean.
Okay.
But I didn't really understand what that meant. Was that the
painting? The illustration?
There's
quite a number of slides back.
Well, I mean, I don't know if we need to go back. It's just, you know.
Say the whole question.
What is the actual relationship between the Viraja River and the causal ocean?
They're the same. They're synonymous.
Because
they're used interchangeably.
Because you had described it as being the Viraja River being the periphery.
Well, that was just colloquial language. They're actually two terms for the same thing.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
You're right.
But when you said
I was helping people that aren't as educated as you understand a little bit. That's what I was trying to do. So, I mean, it's a little mysterious because oceans or rivers have a ocean bottom or a river bottom. And for the river Viraja, there's no bottom. It's just Garbhadakshaya Vishnu resting in the causal ocean or the Karana ocean, and it's also known as the river Viraja, parentheses Karana ocean. They're used interchangeably. Prabhupada would regularly say like this, on the other shore of the river, on this shore is the material energy and that shore is the Brahma Jyoti. Now, it can also be said that all of this cloud of material energy is also in the Brahma Jyoti. I mean, right now, we're in the Brahma Jyoti. We're in the spiritual sky. That can also be said.
Mm-hmm.
But repeating the language that Prabhupada would often use, and our acharyas use, on the other shore of the river Viraja is the Brahma Jyoti, and this shore is the material energy. That's this language. On the farther bank of the Viraja River is your material power. So that's the other bank, the farther bank, and on this side is the spiritual realm. And the river Viraja is said to be the dividing,
mm-hmm.
the division place between the material and spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's spiritual, but, you know, there's the touch of matter within it. There are these material universes that come from the body of Mahavishnu. So it's a little mysterious, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Swami, I just want to give a very aggressive question.
Aggressive question? Why would you want to give an aggressive question?
Well, because
should I give an aggressive answer?
Well, what I'm saying out of humility, I've been practicing or making an attempt to practice Krishna consciousness for a while.
How long?
Oh, probably now 15 years.
15?
Yeah.
1-5.
Okay, that means nothing. But one day at a time. But I heard you mercifully explaining to us And I hear this in a lot of religions, and when Prabhupada said that we're not these bodies, and that when superior energy comes in contact with inferior energy, it's an incompatible situation.
Yeah.
So what I mean is an aggressive question, is it really a debatable issue? Because we all have...
Is what a debatable issue?
A debatable issue is what's superior. If we are experiencing death, shouldn't that be the answer? I mean, we...
The answer to what?
The answer is, what is superior? We all die, right?
No, the body dies.
Right, that's what I mean.
The soul doesn't.
Right, but when someone says, some people say that it's a debatable issue if we're superior, man is superior. I'm like, well, how can we be
superior? No. This isn't man versus other species. This is soul versus matter.
Mm-hmm.
And between the two, one is conscious, the other is not conscious.
Right.
That's all we're talking about. We're not talking about chauvinism or something like that.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, even when I hear these discussions, I'm like, well, we're experiencing death. So matter, it should be a very easy answer to the question.
It's inferior.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
That's what I was saying. It's an aggressive question, because I'm like, I'm experiencing death, so of the body. So for me...
I didn't think it was so aggressive. I think it's pretty logical.
Okay. Well, some people will try to fight, you know, the body. Like,
he's not a fighter. He's
okay,
he's,
no, I'm not trying to say that.
Oh, okay. He's nice. You'll like him. The more you get to know him, you'll like him. Okay, I guess we're good. We're ready for something. Ready for final kirtan while you serve out prasadam? Yes? Ready to do your thing?
Yeah. Let me just turn this on.